Hi.
What can I get for you?
Can I have an everything bagel with egg and cheddar?
Egg, cheddar on everything.
Go ahead.
All right, can I get a plain bagel, egg and cheddar as well?
Egg, cheddar on plain.
And can I get lox, cream cheese, tomato, and onion on everything?
Lox and cream cheese on everything, add tomato, add onions. Is that it?
Yeah.
So.
All right, welcome back to our next episode of Shabbat Spiels with Gabby and
Esther.
This episode is all about the history of the bagel and how Jewish history intertwines with the history of the bagel. So to start off, Esther, can you tell me what actually defines a bagel?
First of all, I just want to interject before I say that and say, isn't this probably the most exciting episode we've had? I mean, like, who doesn't love bagels?
I mean, who doesn't love an episode where Esther can exert her New York superiority complex in any other form possible?
So Gavin came at me right away with that. But anyway, what is a bagel? I knew I could write my own description of what I think a bagel is, but I think Ed Levina of the New York Times, who actually wrote an article on bagels in the New York Times, kind of encapsulated it perfectly. He said, a bagel is a round bread made of simple, elegant ingredients. High gluten flour, salt, water, yeast, and malt. Its dough is boiled, then baked, and the result should be a rich caramel color. It should not be pale and blonde. And that's adding you Greenberries bagels or whatever they sell in the bookstore.
I think it's adding like Jews are not pale and blonde and neither should bagels be.
Oh my god. A bagel should weigh 4 ounces or less and should make a slight cracking sound when you bite into it instead of a whoosh. A bagel should be eaten warm and ideally should be no more than 4 or 5 hours old when consumed because all else is not a bagel. Whether eaten plain or with a smear of cream cheese, with whitefish salad or a slice of Nova, with sesame seeds or salt, toasted or untoasted, by Jew, Gentile, Muslim, Buddhist, or agnostic, the bagel has, for more than a century, helped define breakfast in New York, which honestly I think is very true. Let's see if there's anything interesting that I should add about the bagel. Some more things that Ed Levina had to say on the bagel that I definitely agree with. There's a few other stipulations. So the bagel should not exceed 6 ounces of cream cheese on them. They only need a schmear.
Dean would be behind that.
Cream cheese made without guar gum is optimal, but it's hard to find. On the subject of salmon, it should be Nova, and it should be sliced to order. A good bagel with cream cheese and smoked salmon does not have to be toasted, as contrast with the fat and salt will be provided by the crunchy crust of a properly made bagel exterior, which I'm actually a big proponent of, because if your bagel is fresh, you should not toast it. But a buttered bagel should almost always be toasted, so that you get the great, rich, melted butter taste. Better yet, you can achieve the same effect if you buy your bagels fresh, still warm from the oven, no toasting needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that pretty much encapsulates what I think a bagel is, specifically a New York bagel, but this should apply universally to every country and every place that sells bagels.
Every country, like New York City.
Specifically, yes.
Countries like New York City.
Can you tell I live in a bubble? So after that, I was sort of wondering, Gabby, what is the history of the bagel? Do you know, the history of Bodo's in Charlottesville, or if not, just where do bagels come from? How do we eat these circular pieces of dough?
Yeah, so I listened to an awesome podcast, just going to cite my sources. It's from Gastropod called The Bagelization of America. And they take us through a really great history, and I'll give you a little synopsis. So to start, and going off what you said, like in addition to all of the definitions you gave on what makes a good bagel, what actually defines or separates a bagel from any other kind of bread is the hole in the middle. So that's what makes a bagel a bagel. And the original Jewish bagels were actually hard with a really wide hole in the middle, kind of similar to a circular hard pretzel. And some of these bagel historians found documentation of.
Did you say bagel historian?
I fully said bagel historian.
That's my future career goal from now on.
In their search for finding the origins of how bagels are Jewish, they came across a document from 1610 by the Jewish elders of Krakow in Poland, which gave instructions of when you should eat bagels and how to consume them. And one of these documents was giving instructions for specifically having bagels at the bris of a male baby. So this was kind of an indication that bagels were something of value and was not just a Jewish food, but a Jewish food for special occasions. So the bagel kind of followed Jews around Europe. So it originated in Germany. And then when we went to Poland, so did the bagels. Poland at that time was more hospitable to Jews than Germany was. Jews kind of filled this like economic class of artisans and merchants. And in that class was also the bakers. So there they were, the Jews in Poland making bagels.
So how did the bagel end up in New York after that?
All right, so we have a few more steps, but...
Oh, okay, so there's a little more before that story combines.
This is where we find the like origin of the actual word bagel. There's some debate, if you want to get scholarly here. There's some debates on the origin of the bagel.
Where do you stand on this debate?
So it could be either from the German word for ring, which is bugle, the Austrian word for stirrup, which is bugle.
Good.
Or the Yiddish word for to bend, which is bagen. I'm just going to vote Yiddish because more Jewish things, it's what I vote for. So then eventually they come to the Lower East Side of Manhattan, because that's where the Jews came. As you know, like the history of New York, very underdeveloped at that time, definitely not an up-and-coming place. And the way they describe the bakeries at this time, the woman literally called them hell holes.
Nice.
Yeah, we love that. Hell holes with the bagel holes.
I feel like you can describe all of New York like that right now.
The bakeries were based in basements with really low ceilings, really bad cockroaches and rats problems.
That's exactly what I want with my bagel
You know,
shop.
In New York when you have, like, the rating on the outside window, like, definitely not an A rating in those bagel shops. Hey, look, I can make New York jokes. That's crazy.
It's almost like you're in the Northeast and you wish you could be from New York, but you're not.
Ooh. That's a debate for another time. Anyway, so the bakeries had really, really rough conditions. And what's interesting, do you remember like from Hebrew school learning about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire that really like sparked the labor movement for women's rights and workers' rights?
Fun fact, I never went to Hebrew school. I'm sorry to out myself like this.
Did you go to the Tenement Museum?
I did go to the Tenement Museum. I do know what the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire is.
Okay, so a lot of people point to that as like one of the first protests that sparked like unionization rights and labor rights at large, but they actually were inspired by a protest by these Jewish bagel bakers that were baking in these tough conditions who unionized and protested by carrying a 15-foot loaf of bread through the streets of New York.
Okay, so like we're kind of behind the history of the unionization movement.
Uh-huh. Where not only are bagels Jewish, but unionization is Jewish. Okay, so at this point, the shape of the bagel is starting to change. The bagel itself is softer, no longer really a hard pretzel type. The hole is getting smaller and you can actually slice it. So this is where we're introduced to being able to put schmears, like cream cheese, on the bagel.
Wait. I just saw somewhere also that like bagels used to be sold on like sticks. In the street.
Really?
I don't know. I read that somewhere while I was doing research for this. And, you know, that reminded me of that guy from iCarly.
I was going to say the exact same thing. There's no... You say bagels on a stick, and it's not going through the middle. It's going through the side, like the iCarly guy.
Good. But, yeah, keep going. Tell us how we got to the schmears, because honestly, I gotta say that a bagel is nothing without its schmear.
See, that's what you think. Because... it wasn't until a little bit later that we get the actual quintessential Jewish bagel with lox and cream cheese. The original schmear on bagels was chicken fat and butter. And it wasn't until later when cream cheese and lox were like, well, cream cheese specifically was specifically, oh my God, I said specifically 500 times. Okay. Cream cheese was marketed to Jews to like put on their hamantaschen and other various Jewish foods. But anyways, I'm skipping ahead. So before you asked about how bagels got so large, specifically in New York, and that's because there was like a period in American history where wheat becomes really accessible and really cheap compared to the rest of the world. And when wheat was kind of just readily available to everyone, bakers started putting so much of it in a single bagel. So because there's so much wheat and it all goes in these bagels, the bagels were getting bigger, softer, and puffier because of that. Okay, so now we're moving on to how we get lox and cream cheese to make the full Jewish bagel sandwich.
Coming full circle.
So back to the Germans. Lox comes from the German and Yiddish word for salmon, which is lox.
Crazy how that works.
Crazy. Lox wasn't actually introduced onto the bagel until a really long time of Jews being in America. And Jews got access to it originally because from the Pacific Ocean, because lox was really expensive at first, and they needed to figure out a way to get it cheaper. So they found a way to get it from the Pacific Ocean, where lox, like the actual fish, like salmon, was more in abundance. They shipped it to the East Coast, but in order to get from the West to the East Coast, they had to freeze it and preserve it with lots of salt. So that's kind of how you get like what lox is. But it was really expensive at the time still. So Jews actually only ate it in like really tiny bits. Like they would get one little strip and share it with the whole family.
Oh, wow.
And that's why they would put it in bagels, because it wasn't like enough to sustain themselves on their own.
Right.
So they would put it in bagels. So then I already mentioned kind of how cream cheese falls into the picture. But cream cheese originates from this kind of spreadable cheese from the British, and it was originally considered really fancy. Like at fancy restaurants, the dessert dish would be cream cheese.
Mm. Well, I'm sure it's also not like Philadelphia cream cheese. I'm
hey,
sure it was, like,
stop coming at me.
Oopsie. But yeah, I'm sure the cream cheese was like maybe like more like cottage cheese-esque at the time. Like maybe it was more dessert-esque.
Yeah, I mean, I would eat Philadelphia cream cheese for dessert.
By the spoonful?
By the spoon, on my matzah, like,
this
hello.
This is sort of relevant, but anybody who has not tried, like, a poppy seed or plain bagel with cream cheese and strawberry jam has not lived.
That's, like, really gross.
What are you talking about?
The okay. Poppy seed part.
You can do a plain bagel.
Okay.
I like poppy seed bagels. All right. Anyway, let's
I trust
continue.
You.
I digress.
Okay, but then in the 1920s, the price of cream cheese falls, and then this is where, like, these people that are making the cream cheese just specifically target, it's the original targeted ads to Jews to put on Hamantaschen and another Jewish food. It's, like, the most wild thing. I really don't understand. That could be a whole other podcast. But so then there's this kind of, like, confluence of events where at the same time that the bagel is getting bigger and puffier because of the wheat and therefore sliceable, and lox is, like, slowly being introduced into the Jewish community, so is the cream cheese being targeted to the Jewish community. So it's kind of just, like, all at the same time these things are happening, which makes for the most serendipitous Jewish bagel sandwich of all time. So it's not until the 1940s that Jews start to, like, identify, like they feel like their Jewish identity is tied in with a bagel. So when people kind of identify as cultural or secular Jews, they're like, yeah, I'm a lox and cream cheese Jew type of thing. That doesn't really start happening until the 1940s. And then the bagel spreads across America thanks to Murray and Marvin Lender, the Lender brothers. They're like the people that are responsible for spreading the bagel across America and spreading this Jewish delicacy to the entire country. There's like articles about them. They're really famous.
Thank
apparently.
You, Lender brothers.
Thank you, Lender brothers. They were the ones who came up with storing the bagel in your freezer. You know how like Jewish families will get like a ton of bagels and then, yeah.
Because it works.
So Esther, so I hear that bagels originate, at least in America, in New York. But I mean, obviously we have Bodo's, we like Bodo's. Why are you so loyal to New York bagels specifically? What makes them the best in the entire country?
Well, I hear, and this is kind of, you know, a contentious topic, because some people say Montreal bagels are better, some people say like, I don't know, whatever stupid bagel chain that they go to is better. But some people who are, like, really pro-New York bagels say that it's the mineral content in the New York tap water, which I am partial to New York tap water. I think it's the best tap water. But anyway, the mineral content in your tap water that they boil the bagels in somehow reacts with the gluten ingredients to make them, like, bigger and puffier and, like, taste better. I don't know how true that is. I never looked into the science of it. But I also think that some bagel shops add, like, malt or sugar to their water, which makes it the outside, like, a little sweeter, like, that, like, tougher outside part of it, like, a little bit sweeter. So maybe that's true, maybe that's not. In any case, I will always be going back to my neighborhood bagel place to get a dozen bagels before I come back to Charlottesville whenever I am home.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank
you. Isn't that poetic?
Thank you for that. I'm inspired. Esther did bring me a bagel from New York, and I was able to heat it up in my little Charlottesville home, and it made me very happy.
I'm so happy to bring people, like, the little joys in life.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, I think that's pretty much kind of, like, a quick rundown of what the bagel is, why it's tied to the Jewish community, what its history is. And somehow we ended up here where we're getting bagels in Bodo's every single weekend or every single day for breakfast. And I'm definitely
every
very
Wednesday.
Thankful, very thankful for it.
Me too. I feel like, you know, bagels on the lawn is kind of emblematic of the history of the bagel in America, because it's, we have our, especially if you remember old bagels on the lawn,
oh,
actually
I
on the lawn.
Old bagels on the lawn so much.
I know.
It's highlight, like, of my week.
Yeah. You have our little Jewish community eating our Jewish food on the lawn, but then, of course, like, we always give bagels to any passerby, regardless of if they're in the community or not, which is kind of just reminds me of bagels kind of becoming Americanized, but still, like, tied to Jewish culture.
For sure. Thank you, Bodo's Bagels.
Thank you,
Bagels on the Lawn. Thank you, anyone who hosts Bagels on the Lawn and freezes their butt off during the winter to do it. Very
thank you, New York City. I'll give you that.
Oh, thank you. And that's all. We're signing off. Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Shabbat Spiels. We'll catch you next week.
Shabbat Shalom.
0.
I kind of started in the middle of this looking up the history of Bodo's, and I'm kind of curious if it's interesting, so I'm gonna keep looking at this really quick. Did you know that Bodo's, over the 3 locations, feeds roughly 6,000 people per day?
That's crazy. Thank you, Bodo's. MVP.